Then I'd ask that you please help me welcome Wayne B. from Inglewood.
Where'd that big book go? There was a big book up here. Where'd it go? My security blanket. If you don't have one, get one. That's just a suggestion. And I also might like to read one of the most important pages of the big book, in my opinion. The first three words of page 112 is a direction for new people. And here's the first three words. Read this book. So. My name's Wayne Butler. I'm an alcoholic. Good to be here. Great to be sober. Love A. Thanks, Lee, for inviting me, and thanks, Cora, for the follow-up. And, I want to thank my sponsee, Carrie, for coming up here this weekend. She came up here to meet with one of her sponsees to come to the meeting, but apparently she had other plans. But Carrie came. I'm glad because my car developed brake problems. I had a brake job done yesterday to my car, and I developed brake problems today, so I was happy about that. Carrie came, had a chance to be a service, came and picked me up, took my hotel, and I got all settled in. And people said, well, you sponsor women? I say, no. They say, well, that's a woman. I said, I know. So you sponsor women? I said, no. And by then they're going crazy. And I said, I sponsor alcoholics. And I know some people have an issue with that, but I don't. So whatever. And I'll get into that in a little bit because why it's important to me. How many of you are counting days? Thank you. I know I met the two of you out there in the judgment zone. I'm counting days too. I have 5 days sober today. So I've got three more than you, plus 6 months and 45 years. Congratulations, shipsters. Happy birthday to the birthday people. My sobriety date is November 8, 1977. I've had no booze, pills, powders, potions, or lotions from that day to this. However, I have a history of date, mind, and mood-altering women, so my sponsor threatened me with another 12-step program, so I quit doing that crap. I can barely manage one 12-step program, let alone multiple, but that's me. And I have to tell you this right out of the gate. I'm not just an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic and a happy, joyous, and free. It's the only end I'm going to be today. Anything I do that divides me or separates me has the power to defeat me. As anything. And so the value of a sponsor, as I'll get into it, is very important. The value of sponsorship didn't become apparent to me until I had one. And when I started paying attention to it, it took a while. I came in here with a lot of non-alcohol-related issues, except for they were related in the manner of which I tried to drink them away. And I want to just bring that up right now. I want to get it out of the way so you don't get focused on the psychiatry of it all. But I've been psychiatrically institutionalized 17 times from the age of 9 to the age of 27. I was in an establishment called the Watertown Insane Asylum, which makes the One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest Taj Mahal. I was in there 14 times. That's where they sent the criminally insane. And I have to admit, I self-signed in 4 times because that's where my girlfriend lived. That's the truth. She was hot. She was in there because she murdered her family. And she was found not guilty by reason of insanity. And I just thought that was exciting. Everybody else was scared of her. That just attracted me. I don't know why that is, but the nuts and bolts of AA just seem to attract each other. You know, and the... we couldn't get away with that now, but they encouraged it back then to give us something to do. And I didn't know about sex and restraints till I met her. But I was in restraints, so don't judge me. Judge her. So I came to AA with a lot of what I thought were other issues, and I didn't know they were linked. I didn't know they were linked to alcoholism. I didn't understand alcoholism. I didn't really have any intelligence about it at all. Why would I? And I think most of us come to AA that way. Even if you go through treatment, I know, I went through treatment, and I'm not bashing treatment or sober livings or anything that helps us get here. In my opinion, the best treatment program in the world is the one that brings you to AA. Because once you're gone from there, they have no power of influence over you anymore. And the alcohol doesn't quit just because you left treatment. And I really want to focus on that because so many people come in here from outside resources and you somehow think you've got the answer already. But the answer isn't the issue. It's just knowing what my real condition is. And we have a book here called Alcoholics Anonymous that's pretty soon going to celebrate, what, our 88th year? In just a month. 88 years. I'm not the expert, but Alcoholics Anonymous says something interesting. If you're new, I want you to hear this. I got bad news and good news. Bad news is, scientifically, AA can't work. We're screwed. According to science. Science can't figure this thing out. There's no blood test unless you're being arrested. There's no x-rays that can detect alcoholism. There's no biopsies that can detect alcoholism. And this is the only condition not known to science that requires a self-diagnosis to begin recovery. Your diagnosis of me matters nothing because there's a defiant nature to me that I won't listen to you. This is the only condition that even Silkworth admitted all they have to offer is don't drink. He finishes his opinion in our book by saying that the only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. And that's how they send us to AA. A lot of knowledge of your head, but no relief of any extending period of time. And isn't it something that a couple of drunks, a bankrupt stock speculator, and a butt doctor. Dr. Bob was a proctologist and a drunken one at that. If that concerns you, it should. And I think God knew I was going to get sober someday, so we needed a proctologist, if you know what I mean. Who would think that all these, over 5,000 years of recorded history, all these attempts at solving the drunk problem have failed every single time? The closest one that had the largest numbers was the Washingtonians, who had 5,000 or 100,000 members in 5 years. And that's where our traditions come into play. But because they didn't devote themselves to one thing, and they decided to pursue other things with the same solution they found, pretty soon that 100,000 dropped down to none. And the seven men that started that meeting was headed up by a guy named Lyman Beecher. They were drunk because they didn't have a singleness of purpose to focus on. That's important to me because even though I've been sober 45 years, 6 months, and 5 days, one day at a time, I could still drink. I'm not immune. There's no cure for this thing, this ism thing, this being ismatic that associates itself with alcoholism. And I didn't know that. And I've been in 17 psychiatric institutions, as I mentioned. I've been poked, prodded, pricked, bled. I've had x-rays of my head, or they call them MRIs, right? The MRIs of my head, imaging my brain. And in the process of that, my last diagnosis was a psychopath with homicidal tendencies just because I tried to shoot my sponsor. They seemed to think that was a little erratic. I missed him. Don't judge me. And that got me put in a Watertown insane asylum the last time. I came to a meeting, and I couldn't take it. This isn't working, I said. This ain't going to work for me. And it annoyed me it worked for Barney. It annoyed me it worked for him. But it's not working for me. Like I said, scientifically, AA can't work. How do you get a drunken proctologist and a bankrupt stock speculator? How can they help me? We got these new guys in the room. Do you know you have the power to help another newcomer that they can't touch with a 10-foot pole? That fellow with 2 days. You can get the confidence of somebody with 1 day just by sharing your experience. You see, Bill talked about that in part B of how it works. He said, probably no human power. The word probably should not be left out of that statement. Probably no human power could relieve me of my alcoholism. I want to tell you guys something, and I'm not bashing them. I'm just reporting facts. The human powers of medicine, psychiatry, psychology, sociology, theology, pharmacology and talk therapy all tried to relieve me of my alcoholism, but the best they had to offer me was incarceration, institutionalization, and medication. It's not their fault. They're limited in what they can study. They can only study my behavior, and they psychiatrically diagnosed me because of my aberrant behavior. Rightfully so. But the problem is that wasn't my real problem. My real problem is between these two covers. I didn't know that. How would I know that? I didn't have this book. And so I had this head full of science knowledge and identification and this prescription, that prescription, this diagnosis, that diagnosis. But is that really my problem? Now, I want you to know something. I'm not talking about any other alcoholic but this one right here. So I was baffled when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I literally looked around the room and I thought, how can these people help me? Dr. Rip O'Keefe wrote a chapter in his book about my case. How can you help me? I didn't know that was rambling through my head when I'm sitting next to my sponsor, who's a sixth grade dropout. Worked at John Deere and Williams White his whole life. A machine operator. He's a punch press operator. How could this guy help me, really? And he wanted me to do things like pick up cigarette butts. Now think about that. If you've been through treatment, how can cigarette butts picking up solve your problem? How can seat saving solve your, how can all the service work that it took to put this thing on? Congratulations. That's your e-ticket into AA, into the center of the boat, so to speak. How can that have anything to do with this thing? How can that help me? There's really no viable answer intellectually for that. It's a monkey do, monkey see. It's a monkey do, monkey see. My sponsor had me making coffee. I didn't want to make coffee, Leo. It's Leo, right? I don't want to make coffee. So I made bad coffee. If they said put 4 scoops, I put in 8. And that coffee made your teeth itch. And you know what Curly did? Curly's one of them old farts. You know how they are. Sort of like I am now. He got that cup of coffee and the stir stick almost stood up straight. I might be exaggerating a little bit. He took a swig of that and I watched his face contort. He said, newcomer, that's a real stout cup of coffee. Keep it up. I thought I could get fired from the coffee making job. You can't get fired from the coffee making job unless you don't make it. That annoys the AA people. Now, how does that have anything to do with recovery? I mean, if you're new, you got to wonder that kind of, how can this help me? I wondered it, so why wouldn't you be wondering it in a way? So why do it? You see, if I can't understand it, the chances are I won't do it. So I have a sponsor who explained things to me. He's explained it like this. Make the coffee, and then he walked away. And then they had me do breakfast. My whole group had a Sunday morning breakfast meeting. I had to be there at 6 a.m. I get up at the crack of noon. I don't work. I got to be there at 6 a.m. to cut the potatoes. No help. Nobody's helping me. So much for their spirituality. I'm noticing that, by the way. I'm cutting the potatoes, cooking the bacon, eating most of it, cooking the bacon. And then we serve the meal. I got a resentment. There ain't no old-timers helping me. No old-timers are helping me. But I got to tell you, secretly, this was the coolest job I've ever had. People were patting me on the back. Even though I broke their egg, alcoholics get mad when they want an egg over easy and you break it. And if I know it makes you mad, I break both of them. I don't know what that is about me. And so if you're one of the folks in your first year and you have those moments where you look around and say, how can this help me really? Because we don't say that. We don't find someone who's got some time and success in the program to say, how's this thing going to help me? I don't understand. How can all this? Then we say, monkey do, monkey see. That's what I'll tell you. Do it, then you'll see why. But an alcoholic might not do that. So Bill wrote in the big book that I need a full knowledge of my condition. He's talking about my spiritual condition. You see, once I stop drinking, Dr. Silkworth suggests, in his opinion, that the disease component of alcoholism is arrested the minute I stop drinking. The disease is arrested. It no longer has anything to do with me. A lot of people don't like to hear that, mainly because it's so easy these days to hide behind my disease made me do it. And I lose any responsibility for my life whatsoever. So the disease for me was arrested November 8, 1977. It will have nothing more to do with my life unless I pick up that first drink. If I pick up that first drink, that disease that's been arrested will come roaring back. But it's not out there to get me dead. The idea that it wants me dead is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard, no offense. To add an intelligence to an illness. A lot of people do it inadvertently because we're taught that. We're taught many things as we come in here, but a lot of those things don't make any sense. And so if I have a disease, I'm in trouble. I'll tell you why. AA is not designed to treat disease of any kind. Or you'd have 1,000 cancer patients in here right now looking for a sponsor. You'd have people with tuberculosis in here getting a sponsor. You'd have people with diabetes putting their insulin away and coming here and they can't wait to do the steps if AA was designed to treat disease. But in my experience, and I'm so grateful to tell you newcomers this is the good news. AA is designed not even to treat this thing. It's designed to resolve the spiritual conflicts that caused me to drink. They put me at ease, just like alcohol. At once, I get a sensation of ease and comfort by taking a few drinks. Do you know that AA service will do that? You may not know it. You may not like it like I didn't, but I always felt good doing it. Isn't that something? I want to deny that. I came in here and I saw all the worker bees working. I wasn't judging, I'm just reporting. I didn't see one of them frowning. All these service workers that were behind the counter, over here jabbering, over there taking care of me, not one of them had a frown on their face. And especially after meeting me, that's newsworthy. From what my sponsor says. Okay, enough of that. I hope you newcomers keep coming back. Monkey do, monkey see. Remember that. I come from an alcoholic home. I'm hesitant to share a lot of that because I don't want to make it about that, but I have to. Do you know? You know, a lot of people say they had their first drink at 12. Some people had their first drink at 10. Do you know I was born drunk? I didn't know that until I got my birth record. I didn't know that I was born with almost a fatal amount of alcohol in my blood as baby Butler because my mom drank the whole time she was pregnant with me. And I'm not mad at my mom because I found out real late in life. I might have been mad at her if I knew that back in the day. I might have blamed her for everything. But I have to understand my mom is perhaps spiritually sick also. And if I seek forgiveness, I have to warrant my mother forgiveness. She wasn't doing anything intentional. And Mayo Clinic diagnosed me as being an adult with fetal alcohol syndrome. Now, I want to make it about that either, but it explains a lot of the things that were inexplicable to me about my mind and my emotions, about how when I don't drink, I'm worse. It's like, how many of us know a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde alcoholic? Normal in every way, except for the drink. Well, the other one is the Mr. Hyde looking for Dr. Jekyll. That's me. I found him in a bottle of Budweiser. Ha! You give me a few Budweiser and I get so good looking, I can't stand it. Ha! You know, back in 1949 when I was born, they had no knowledge of this thing called fetal alcohol syndrome. So as I aged, and these irreversible emotional defects began to take a hold of me. No one knew what that was. You know what they called it back in 1958? I got diagnosed retarded. Anybody else? Come on, own up. Come on. I had a hunch, the guy in the hat. Yeah. How many of you have taken the IQ test? Go ahead, raise your hand. Anybody here taking the IQ test? All right, call me out if I'm wrong. If you score 100, you're pretty smart. You score a 120, you're borderline genius. You score a 150, and there's an organization called Mensa that will recruit you to sit in a room and think. And they will pay you to do it. Now, I have heard people in AA say that alcoholics are above average intelligent people. Well, in 45 years, 6 months, and 5 days, Mensa has never came to an AA meeting recruiting anybody. I just don't want to hurt nobody's feelings. That didn't make me alcoholic. However, Mayo says 80% of babies born that way become alcoholics or drug addicts. 80%. But that doesn't make you alcoholic. So it's something to mention because there might be other alcoholics in this room that don't understand that might be what happened to them when they were born and they have these terrible emotions that they don't understand and they start getting diagnosed all kinds of other things. AA was designed to manage that. AA was designed to resolve the conflicts of a broken spirit. A soul sickness, Reverend Sam Shoemaker told Bill. Said to Bill, you got a broken spirit, you have a soul sickness. Dr. Jung says, spiritus contra spiritum. The greatest medicine is also the greatest poison because it creates a spiritus-like effect in the mind of a broken person. I take a few drinks and something happens to me that alcohol is not biochemically indicated to do. I know the science of ethanol alcohol. I've studied it. Alcohol is supposed to do one thing and one thing only. It's a central nervous system suppressant. You eventually will begin to have your judgment impaired. That's when the police start finding you. Your judgment gets impaired. You start to get tired. You pass out. That's why a lot of crackheads are in AA, because they don't want to go to sleep. No offense. You want to speed it up, so to speak. Because alcohol does what it's supposed to do. It makes them tired. It'll do that to me too, but it has a contrary effect at the same time, newcomer. And if you don't know this, it has the power to kill you. While it's sedating me, it's doing something it's not supposed to do. It's giving me a supernatural effect. It's making me think I'm okay. I get this sensation that everything's all right in Wayne's world. I'm not afraid of you. I'm not afraid of the bullies anymore. You know, when I took that IQ test, I scored a 57. And I didn't cheat. And I got diagnosed mentally retarded. And I got pulled out of that alcoholic home and put into a retarded group home. They called it that. I don't mean to be offensive to anybody who's got a special child, but it was called mentally retarded. It's on my high school transcript that I was in the retarded class. They changed that in 1969 to special ed. We were in a group where we didn't participate in regular high school. I'm not blaming. I'm just reporting facts. It finally made sense to me when I did my four step. I was able to look back over my fears. These inexplicable fears I have that I don't understand. These resentments that I... By the way, when I was in therapy, there wasn't anybody owning up to their resentments. I'll tell you that right now. But that guy sitting across the table from me, he was going one for one with me. That's why it works. You see, that guy or that gal sitting across the desk that's codifying what I'm saying by their experience, and they don't want nothing from me. They're not doing it because they're being paid. Doing it for fun and for free. I know that. I picked up on that right away. My sponsor didn't want nothing from me. He scared me. Here's the guy I tried to shoot 6 months earlier. And now he's coming to pick me up at the Watertown Insane Asylum and he's taking me home. He talked him into releasing me to him. And he brought me to AA. That got my attention. I know what spirituality looks like. Today, if it happened today, they'd be piping daylight to me. And I would never leave. I didn't know I had alcoholism. I had the ism first, and then I took a few drinks, and it did what it's not supposed to do. It erased all that negativity I have about myself. It's not supposed to do that. So why would I quit drinking? Just say no. Nancy Reagan tried that, the just say no thing. I'd just say yes. Give me a Budweiser. King of beers. You know, when I came out here today from Inglewood through Santa Monica, 405 North, out by the 101 freeway exchange, do you know at the Roscoe Boulevard exit on the west side is an Anheuser-Busch brewery? I slow down and have a moment of silence when I go by there. I want to talk about something. There's so much power in the fifth chapter. Now, I know you didn't read that tonight because you have a format that you follow, and this is not by any means a critique of that. But most of us hear how it works read thousands of times, don't we? Do you know after a while, it becomes white noise if you're not careful? Time to check my phone? Time to talk to my neighbor? time to gossip. But the tragedy of that is the newcomers notice we're doing that too. And then they do it. Monkey do, monkey see, monkey do. See? That's the reverse part of that, isn't it? Because they don't know. It's an amazing thing what happens here in that regard. I lost my train of thought.
How it works.
What?
How it works.
I wish I had a canned pitch. I wouldn't have to do that. How it works. What is that what I was saying?
Yeah.
Oh, that ain't what I was getting at, though. Here's why. I think Bill, because he was divinely inspired, I believe he put the heartbeat of Alcoholics Anonymous in those three pages. He answered so many questions as I stayed sober. And I just want to go through that real quick, if you don't mind. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Notice it says person and not AA. I want to submit something to you newcomers. AA has no failure here. AA never fails. It's only the people who refuse to apply it to its fullest. You see, I'm a half-measure man demanding a full-measure result. But the results are nil if I have measure it. It's an amazing thing. And path. Do you know I was sober several years before I realized path is not plural? How many times have we pluralized AA path with a bunch of outside expertise stuff that has nothing to do with our work in Alcoholics Anonymous? I did it, and I paid the price. But path isn't plural. This is our path for AA. Now, what a person adds to it as they go along, none of my business. But I want people to become an AA-er before they start adding in all the salt and pepper. Because when you do it early on, I have a tendency to replace it with that stuff out there. And then pretty soon I'm not doing AA, I'm even sounding like AA when I share. I'm sounding like somebody in treatment as I share, or some other facility that doesn't, their language doesn't concur with our literature. The only reason I say that is what they're selling isn't going to keep me sober. But what we're sharing has, and will continue to do that. That's what. So path is not plural. I got four members of my family. I use this for this reason. I got four members of my immediate family who all had sobriety in AA at one time. And all four died drunk. Two by suicide. And I was confused by that, folks, because I was newer. And I heard people say, God keeps them sober. I said, I don't want that God, Barney. Why do you keep them sober, but he doesn't keep my family sober? What's so special about them? And I learned a new lesson. People say what people say. But you can have too much God and not enough AA to stay sober. AA and God are inextricably linked in the language of the heart in here. And I want you newcomers to know that. So many people inadvertently get caught up in the panoply of outside life that they forget to do this. And I didn't understand that. Why did my kissing cousin Paulette? Oh, she was gorgeous. She was fourth cousin, so don't get weird. That's legal in Missouri. I had become a police officer when I was 10 years sober. It's impossible. I don't have time to tell you that. But I jumped through a lot of hoops, got a lot of forgiveness, and I was able to join the Sheriff's Department in Polk County, Iowa, even with my record, my history. And I was out on patrol one night, and I got tripped out to this nasty hole, which you call a crack hotel now, out in the county. And my cousin Paulette had come up missing. We hadn't seen her for a long time. And I got tripped out to this hotel. I got the information that her body was inside. I was first officer on the scene. Hotel manager opened the door, and there was my kissing cousin Paulette. She hung herself. She had vodka and whiskey bottles strewn all over her. She had the same chance I had. Why not her? How come God didn't keep her sober? You see, God needs our cooperation. That's why. I can pray all I want, but it requires my cooperation and my participation. Those were sad but effective lessons for me. Because I love God, but I know that God cannot keep me sober without AA. God and AA are inextricably linked. You can just say that's my opinion if you like. I'm glad I learned that because I love God with all my heart. But you know, I loved God before I ever took, you know, I was a church going little kid. That when I had all them emotional problems, I found peace at church. I looked forward to going to Sunday school. I wish I could have stayed there all day, because the minute I left there, all those fears came back on me. They didn't go away and stay away. But when I was in church, I loved this atmosphere. I'm not a guy who bangs out any religion, because everything has a bad seed here or there, don't they? Churches mean to do well, but not everybody does, but it means to. And so I don't bash any of those things that are helping people find some light in their life. But this brings me comfort to be in an atmosphere like this. It just doesn't keep me sober. Strangely enough, I need you guys. And then that next sentence, the very next sentence, tells me why my four family members died drunk, two by suicide. It says, those who do not recover. I mean, do we really read this and pay attention? I didn't. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. And my idea completely is one meeting a month. Anybody relate? What do you mean, call your sponsor every day? I got things to not do. I got to sit around and do some controlled thinking. I don't understand. And then this sponsor that's made, he made himself my sponsor. He was self-appointed. You ever have one of those people that self-appoint? If you do, you're lucky, I think. When I met Barney, I was, I'd been released for the 13th time from psychiatric hospital when I met him. He said, hi, my name's Barney. I'm an alcoholic. Well, I've learned that when they tell you something like that, they want you to give them something back. I know how they are. They're like salesmen, you know. He's trying to seduce. He's giving me something, now you got to give him something. So I said, well, I'm Wayne and I'm ADD. He says, I'll bet you are. He didn't miss a beat. And then I said, so you know what else I am? Now I'm winning, see. You know what else I am? He said, what's that? I said, I'm OCD. He says, I'll bet you are. And then before I could catch my breath, he says, you know what else I think you might be? I thought I won, 2-1. He got one diagnosis, I got two. And I said, what's that? He says, I think you might be ODD. Now in 1977, in the DSM-3, there's no diagnosis of ODD. And I knew that because I studied that book because I want to know what it looked to give the doctor to get the pill I want. So I said, what's that? He said, you are very odd. And then he says, and I'm going to be your sponsor. And that's where my life lessons began. I just didn't know it. Monkey do, monkey see. I didn't know that's where my life lessons were going to be started. I did my fourth and fifth step with that man. He knew things about me no other human being knew. And he also knew my reputation in town. And I'm not a tough guy. So if some of you are tough guys, I've already noticed you, by the way. I'm looking for you. Don't go out back and tough up on me. I'm sensitive. I'm not a tough guy. I was just insane. And I did terrible things to people. Terrible. I didn't think there was hope for me. Is anybody, don't raise your hand, but how many of you come in here thinking there's no redemption for you? There's no hope for you. I hear all this good God talk and all this happy, joyous, and free, snarky stuff. So yeah, it's easy for you, Bob. You're sober 35 years. You got a house, you got a job, you got a wife. Good for you, Bob. I live in a dumpster, Bob. I have four teeth, Bob. I open my mouth whistles in the wind, Bob. They made fun of you back then, Leo. I got sober November 8, 1977. That Thanksgiving, we were having a convention. And they had guys like me, they call them speakers, but I want you to know something. I understand the euphemism, but we're not really speakers. That's a speaker. I'm just a member of AA willing to drive from Inglewood to Orcutt because you asked me to. And six of those folks came to my hometown to talk at this Thanksgiving convention. My sponsor says, let's go. He didn't notice I've only got four teeth and I don't like to be in public. And I haven't had a bath in months. I live in a dumpster. behind Larry's Oasis. I don't want to be too far from the brew. And he, instead of saying, you stink, you smell, instead of shaming me, he says, look, would you mind if I buy you a new set of clothes to take you to this convention and meet some friends of mine? And I'm thinking Sears and Roebuck. I'm thinking JCPenney. He's thinking Salvation Army. So he took me to Salvation Army. This is 1977. Disco is out at Studio 54. And they donated all the zoot suits to Salvation Army nationwide. So we're going down the aisle and there's rows and rows and rows of polyester leisure suits. Mine is lime green. He picked it for me. And then it had two buttons, none were missing, had these collars down to here, right? And then he bought me this shirt. I picked it out. I thought it was silk. It was brushed polyester. It was shiny yellow with animals around it, had collars down to here. He made me wear a tie with it. He's one of those guys. And then the only shoes they had that would fit my feet were these gunboats, these black and brown Boxed to Oxford platform disco shoes. So we bought them. Got out of there for $1.85. I went in 6'3" and came out 6'8", baby. My tongue's wagging for all it's worth. I got no teeth to stop it. He takes me home to his trailer and says, if you'd like to take a bath before you put those new clothes on, it's okay. You can use my tub. Didn't shame me. I'm used to that. I wouldn't even have noticed it. I'm just used to people pointing the finger at me and calling me a scumbag, because I was, in those words, a scumbag. The book says an alcoholic in his cups is an unlovely creature. They called me a monster. Here's a guy that I tried to shoot 8.5 months earlier. He says, come out to my trailer again and take a bath. And I did. Then he took me to that convention, stood me at the front door, and made me a greeter. I had a nervous tick. My four teeth were strategically located. The members of AA that came to give a talk was a guy by the name of Chuck C. He had his wife Elsa with him. A guy named Norm Elpe. A guy named Johnny H. from the Bellflower Big Book Group. A guy named Clancy I from High in the Sky. I said to my sponsor, he looks like Magoo. He said, don't say that. Well, he does. Chuck C comes up on me. He looks right at me. I swear before God. He goes like this. And I looked at Barney. I said, I'm going to clean it up. God damn it, Barney, are they laughing at me? He says, oh, yeah. You are a sight to behold. He says, you know what? If you ever learn to laugh at yourself, you'll never be left unamused. That hurt my one feeling. Norm Elpe went by me and he laughed the whole time. He talks. How many of you heard Norm Elpe's tape if you haven't met him? He talks a mile a minute. If you ever heard Karen Garrison, she was a dear friend of mine. She mimicked him. She talked a mile a minute. Just they never breathed. They just talked. It's like my racing mind kept up though. That was a good time. So Norm Elpe just laughed when he went by me. He didn't want to embarrass me, so he just kept running moving. Johnny H. put me up against the wall and patted me down. He whispers in my ear, I heard about you, kid. Clancy, I made fun of me from the podium. I cut in front of me and we had a potluck like you had. Well, I'm new and I don't know what's going on. I'm hungry. So me and my four teeth cutting right in front of Magoo. He taps me on the shoulder. He says, asshole, where do you think you're going? He's only this big, that little, he looks like Magoo, he does. I'm not offending him, I'm just saying the truth. And I said, well, I'm going to eat. He said, not on my dime, you're not. Go to the back at the end of the line. Okay. And then he gets up there and talks and he points me out and makes fun of me in front of everybody. Now, I want you to know something. I told my sponsor how bad that made me feel about myself. He got me his cassette, and I listened to that cassette recording over and over and over again. I'd get newcomers to sit and listen to it, and I'd play it right where he made fun of me, and I'd start over again. He wasn't ridiculing me. He was bringing me in. He had this genius ability to know who he could talk to like that and how he would pull me in with that, and he did. A gal named Dottie Shore, what a sweetheart. She kissed me on the forehead, and I felt her lips moving in laughter. And Tom Brady Jr., I want to share this with you new people. Tom Brady Jr. is a Friday night speaker. I'm 17 days sober. It's Friday night. Tom's an MSW, very smart man, does a lot of talks on emotional sobriety. I don't know this. I'm just finding it out. And I swear he's staring at me because my sponsor's got me in death row, the front row. He's got me right there in the front row, and I swear to God, Tom is staring a hole right through me. Now, I'm not sure he was. I might have been a tad self-centered. He's staring right at me. And then he goes like this, "Newcomer!" I got bad news and good news. He got my attention. He said, "The bad news is we don't get well here." And I looked at my sponsor and I said, "I knew it. It's a scam." And it's like he knew he set the hook. And he says, "The good news is we have an opportunity by way of the 12 steps to get weller than well." And then he explained it, because he knows knuckleheads like me don't understand. So he explained it. He said, "Them earth people out there, they live good lives. Many of them go to church, many of them don't, but they pay their bills, they raise their kids, they send them off to college. Some don't, some do. But they live good lives. They're happy, basically." He says, "But we, because of our condition, are necessarily forced to take actions we may not believe in. Actions that lead us to get weller than well. We become stable financially, emotionally, mentally. We have that opportunity." But how's that to happen? I mean, I'm looking around this room right now, and I don't mean no disrespect, but how can that happen here? I'm looking at some of you guys saying, "I'm going to turn my life over to you." You betcha. Part B of how it works, probably no human power. Remember I mentioned that? I've heard people say no human power, and then they point out sponsors of human power. Then they point out nobody. They make it all about God. AA is not about God at all, in my opinion. AA is of God. There's a difference. You see, when I'm plugged into AA, I'm plugged into God. And so I just go about AA's business. And I believe that pleases God. I didn't know none of this stuff when I was new. I was a knucklehead. I acted like I knew. Did anybody else ever do that? Yeah, act like you knew. I know. I got it. I know. I don't know. Thank you. And then people started asking me to sponsor them. I don't want to sponsor them. I don't mean no disrespect to my father. My father was a drunken teamster out of Chicago, union steward in Chicago, worked for a guy named Jimmy Hoffa. My dad was one of his busy guys. My dad was a genuine tough guy. Shoot you, stab you, just look at you. That's the way he wanted me to be like that. He wanted me to be like him. He wanted to toughen me up because he knew what the world was like. And he wanted to get me ready for that. But I write poetry. That annoyed him to no end. I didn't know I wrote poetry. I had this gift of words. I had this ability. When I was 9 years old, I was out walking in my neighborhood on a Friday afternoon. And what we now know is a pedophile took me off the street and put me in his basement and locked me in a coal bin for 3 days and tortured my little body. Raped me, put things in my body, beat me. Then on Monday morning, he threw me out naked in the street. And he said, "If you tell anybody, I'll kill you and your family." And I never told a living soul till I did my fourth step. That didn't make me alcoholic, but it did what Bill Wilson talked about. It discolored my personality. But we heal here. You see, because it broke my spirit even more. My spirit was already broken, but that compounded the fracture. I don't know how to deal with that. I don't have tools for that. then my sponsor wants me to sponsor you people. You see, my father was a very brutal man. God rest his soul. I wish he would have stayed sober. But I know he sees me down here right now, and I know he's okay. What I'm about to say is not to smear his name. My dad was a Klansman as well. My dad was a bigot. He was everything that hates. And I'd be lying to you if I didn't tell you I did, got imprinted by that. So when I came into AA, I couldn't be in a room with anybody of a different color, religion, sex. And I couldn't tell nobody. I didn't know what was wrong with me. So I told my sponsor. Now here's the danger of telling your sponsor stuff like that. All of a sudden, strange people started asking me to sponsor them. This guy named Charles, an African-American, black, he don't mind me saying that, asked me to sponsor him. And I called him the N-word and I said, I don't sponsor people like you. Get away from me. I got a phone call that night from my sponsor. He said, I heard you, Charles, you told Charles you wouldn't sponsor him because he's black. I said, that's right. He said, let me ask you something, dummy. Are you aware nobody in this town likes you? He says, there's not a living soul in AA that wants you here. They're either scared of you or they hate you. Are you aware of that? I said, patently so. So much for AA unconditional love, sponsor. He says, are you aware there's not another alcoholic in this town that'll sponsor you? I said, probably. He said, no probably about it. I'm it. What you're going to do is you're going to go home. You're going to call Charles. You're going to apologize. You're going to beg him to forgive you. And then you're going to tell him that if he's willing to have you sponsor him still, you'll be happy to do that. Click. But he said, or I won't sponsor you after that. I don't know why I knew I needed Charles or Barney to sponsor me, but I called Charles up. And I said, Charles, I'm so sorry I said that to you. And I'll prove that. If you still want me to be your sponsor, I'd be happy to. You know what he said? I want you to be my sponsor. You got something I want. I said, okay. I hated him. I did everything I could to get him to fire me. I poured coffee on him. Accidentally. Then this Jewish woman asked me to sponsor her. I said, I don't sponsor Jews. Get away from me. You killed Jesus. That's what I said. I don't hold that opinion today. I'm just saying. So I didn't want nothing to do with you. Get away from me. Got a call that night. Barney says, I heard you won't sponsor her. I said, that's right. First of all, she's a woman, I think. She's Jewish. I can't sponsor her. He did the same thing. You realize nobody in this town likes you. I said, okay, you already told me that. He said, shut up. You didn't hear me. I called her back up, and she said, I still want you to sponsor me. Then this lesbian called me. I didn't know she was a lesbian until she told me. But I can't sponsor her either. My dad has an issue with that. Got the call, made the call, found out later that my sponsor was sending every one of them to me. Monkey do, monkey see. I now live in Inglewood. I'm in the hood. I'm the only cracker in four blocks. I get along with everybody. AA's colorblind, people. Thank God. My dad never recovered from that. My dad died drunk because he couldn't get past his own life. And he couldn't bear watching me get along with all types of God's kids. And that's because I took the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm even snarky about that. Maybe some of you relate to this. I remember when I was reading the big book, and I'm not liking my sponsor that day. So I read it, here are the steps we took. I said, so Barney, where'd they took them? He said, you are SOS. I said, what's that? He said, you are stuck on stupid. He says, they took them to heart. And I suggest you do the same. How do you do that? He says, you take them. And as you take them the first time, you're taking them for you. The effect produced may not take place right away. But then you take them with another alcoholic. And it starts to move so slowly from the head to the heart. eventually, if I take enough people through the steps, he suggested that this would get from my head to my heart. And I believe it has. I love tormenting newcomers with the steps. But I want to give you newcomers some hope. You don't mind, do you? Okay, I want to give you newcomers some hope. You might be thinking this guy's full of it. Well, I might be. I'm not sure. I want to tell you about the steps. This is what I've learned in 45 years, 6 months, some of what I've learned in 5 days. Do you know there's 3 phases of 12-step development? I didn't know this. I learned it. Monkey do, monkey see. I learned there's 3 phases of 12-step development, and I want you to know why this is important. Those 3 phases are called desperation, restoration, and transformation. Desperation is the first phase of AA development in steps 1, 2, and 3, because I would have never taken steps 1, 2, and 3 if I wasn't desperate. I wouldn't have taken them to heart. I would have been a yes man and didn't get my sponsor off my back, or because he wanted to hurry up and give me to step 4. We just raced right through steps 1, 2, and 3. He didn't do that. He knew those steps were designed to keep that desperation in place. Because I need that desperation to move to the next phase of 12-step development, and that's steps 4 through 9, restoration. And Chuck C. taught me there's a duality to that restoration phase. The first of that is we've been restored to soundness of mind where alcohol is concerned. And for many of you, alcohol and drugs. For me, it's alcohol and psych meds and diagnoses. There's a duality to that. I've been restored to soundness of mind where alcohol, because I understand the efficacy of ethanol alcohol. I'm missing those enzymes that most normal drinkers have, alcohol dehydrogenase and aldehyde dehydrogenase. Those are the 2 enzymes that break ethanol alcohol down into a simple food product that most people can get rid of in normal function. But for me, I don't have the necessary enzymes to do that. And it doesn't break down alcohol. It builds up an acetone level and it creates a craving for more. Alcohol, water satisfies my thirst. Look at that. I've only drank that much water. Can you believe it? This quenches my thirst. Budweiser makes me extremely thirsty. The duality of that is, how many of us would like a new beginning? How many of us would like our records stripped away? How many of us would like to have a clean slate? To be restored to that place God wanted us to be in the first place. I was born behind the eight ball, as they used to say back then. How can I be where I am today? Except one step at a time, one day at a time, one moment at a time. Monkey do, monkey see. Steps 4 through 9 give us the opportunity to be restored to that place God wanted me to be all along, a state of grace. You should want to do that. I became a cop because I did that. Now, I'm not sure you want to do that. But I tell you, it's a lot of fun arresting drunk drivers. I have to admit that. I can spot an alcoholic a mile away, because as soon as I pull you over and I say, hey, what was your name with 2 days?
Elijah.
I knew that, Elijah. If I asked you how many you had tonight, what would you say?
2 beers.
Couple, yeah. You're an alcoholic, you're going to a meeting. I've arrested drunk drivers that were normies. I had arrested this one woman. I got her pulled over after about a 3-mile chase, and she didn't even know I was chasing her. I finally pulled up alongside of her with lights and siren and spotlight going like this, and she looks over at me while she's driving. I finally got her to pull over, and then I walked up on her and she wouldn't roll her window down for me. I said, finally I got her to do that. And I said, take your keys out of your hand to me and get out of the car. She said, officer, I can't do that. I said, lady, no, I can't call my sponsor. It's kind of inconvenient. There's no cell phones back then. I said, lady, give me the keys and get out of the car. Now she's angry. Officer, I told you I can't get out. And I said, get out or I'll pull you out. And then I thought, maybe I should ask her why she can't get out. Where'd that come from? Huh. I said, ma'am, why can't you get out of the car? She says, officer, I'm so drunk I can't stand up. There ain't no alcoholic ever said that. Restoration. What a state of grace it is to go through that. See, many people that are new are afraid because they don't understand why they have to do that. But let me share something with you from my own experience. I didn't know I could clean my slate. I thought I'd done too many bad things. I did terrible things in Vietnam. Now, they might have been justified by war, but they were terrible to me. And then I came home and wrought that same crap on the streets of my hometown and terrified my neighbors, my own children, my wives, my friends. So by the time I got to you, I was heavily medicated and I was called a monster. I didn't think there was sufficient help for me. Restoration, steps 4 through 9, my opportunity to have grace. And the third phase of 12-step development of a newcomer is the transformation phase. I've heard people say, you need to change. Folks, if I could change, I would have changed me years and years and years ago. I don't have the power to change me. AA has the power to change me. That's the amazing part of this program. This changes me. Being up here right now. Hi, sweetie. Isn't she cute? She said, oh no, I don't want to talk to him. She's so cute. Is she yours, Jordy? Good job. Okay. Isn't that, it's cute, isn't it? I got a whole bunch of them little suckers running around. What, you think I just drank? Steps 10, 11, and 12 are the transformation phase. And the transformation can't become real until I've done steps 4 through 9 completely, as best I can. And there's a lot of grace in that. We just do the best we can. If you're honestly doing the best you can, that'll be enough. And then when it comes time to do more, you will. For example, 207 days ago, I was doing a workshop in the Palisades on emotional sobriety. I've done that workshop 402 times. I've looked up words to define and use in the workshop, but the one word I've never looked up is judgmental. I've never looked it up. I wonder why. So I looked up the definition of judgmental, and it says to judge harshly. Well, that don't sound so bad. I have a friend of mine who's an expert with the English language, and he says, why don't you look up the synonyms? And I thought, is that a virus? Look, I was retarded. I never read books. My sponsor got me a dictionary, so I started looking up words so I could know how to talk and read. But I never looked up that word. And then I looked up the synonyms of judgmental, and I had a little bit of throw up in my throat. And I did a 45-year inventory of my life prior to my 45th birthday to see how my judgmental nature separated me and divided me from people I love and care about. And so for 207 days today, up to this point, I have not passed judgment on anybody. I've had temptation. A lot of red meat out there. I'm not saying I don't judge behavior because I have to protect myself. But I can realize that the person attached is perhaps spiritually sick. I don't have to judge and condemn them because they might save my life someday. And I've only been practicing that. See, if I hadn't, you'll hear some people say time don't matter. I think I know what they mean by that. I think they mean that anybody could take a drink. But it doesn't come across like that when they say that. It comes across like, well, your time doesn't matter. But it does, because if I hadn't stayed 45 years sober, I would have never got to that point where I don't want to be a judgmental human being anymore. This is the toughest challenge I've ever accepted. You try it for a day of not being judgmental in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Man, there's red meat every time somebody opens their mouth. By the way they look. You hear me? It's a new adventure for me. I've had many of those adventures along the way where I've been awoken to a better way. And I've accepted those challenges. Newcomer, I don't have problems anymore. Problems are hard for me to deal with. I've got challenges. You know, on December 30th, I had plans for New Year's Eve, and she was cute. Had a ticket bought for the PG play. And then on December 30th, I fell and broke my hip. You can't dance with a broken hip, I just want you to know that. And then it went undiagnosed for 2.5 months because the VA misread the x-ray and said I didn't have a broken hip. So I crawled around for 2.5 months with a broken hip. Then they finally diagnosed it with a CAT scan, and March 23rd, they did the hip replacement surgery. And I'm still recovering from that. I got blood clots in my leg. That's a challenge. I don't see it as a problem. I don't do well with problems like that. But it challenges me. It challenges my program. Carrie came and visited me in the hospital. Different people visited me in the hospital. My phone rang off the hook. You helped me go through that, even with 45 years of sobriety, one day at a time. 45 years does not make me immune to the human condition. And that's where I want to talk about that no human power stuff. If you're new, Elijah, if I'm alone, Wayne B., if I'm alone trying to solve my problem in my head, no human power. But if I'm sitting there talking to you, Elijah, that's not a human power. If I'm talking to you about Alcoholics Anonymous, that's a spiritual power. Make no mistake about it. 1 + 1 = 3. Elky math. Elky math. 1 + 1 = 3. When one alcoholic is talking program with another alcoholic, God comes roaring in. That's not a human power. That's a spiritual power. So don't let somebody tell you that because you're a human power, you can't help somebody. It's got to be God. Step 12 tells me God wants me to do that. Step 12 tells me God wants me to talk to that new person. Or that person with 30 years is thinking about going out and can't say they're thinking about it because they got 30 years. That's not a human power. That's a spiritual power. Coming here today. I don't even need to tell you the gymnastics my head started playing with me when my brakes began to fail, knowing they were just replaced yesterday. How am I going to do this? I'm 180 miles away. I'll show them. And then I had to click. I had to click over into my understanding of this way of life. I had to do a spot check inventory. Anger isn't going to solve it. What can we do? So I drove over to that Grand Tire place. Met a guy there named Eddie. Eddie said, "We're full. We can't get your car in. Leave it here. We'll get it in the morning." I said, "I want to go home tomorrow morning." He said, "Yeah, okay, leave it here." And so I said, "Listen, Eddie, I tip good." He called me at 4:15 and said, "Hey, I got your car done." So I paid the bill and tipped him $20. Because I can. And the guy did me a favor. He worked hard to get that car fixed. And he did. And I didn't have to call up Gabriel at Big O Tires, West LA, except to tell him they got to pay the bill. I mean, I did do that. I don't want to get carried away here. I got 6 minutes. Those are the three phases of 12-step development. It almost always requires a sponsor. And so what's happened for me in 45 years, 6 months and 5 days, one day at a time? Man, when I was 5 years sober, a guy asked me to sponsor him, and I said, "Okay, why?" He said, "Well, I want what you have." So he ran off with my wife. No, it's okay. It's funny now. So I called my sponsor up, and I told him what happened. He says, "Well, he warned you." I said, "What?" "He warned you." He said, "Didn't you ask him why he wanted you to sponsor you?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Didn't he say he wanted what you had?" "It sounds true." Wasn't funny at the time. We got divorced. I want to tell you the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. 3 years later, they got married. He asked me to sponsor him again, and I said, "Okay, but we'll get to step 8 as fast as we can." And then they asked me to officiate their wedding because I'd become a clergyman by then. Because I owe such a debt to society that I'm just trying to find ways to pay it forward, to pay it back. So I officiated their wedding. And they were perfect for each other. We were wrong for each other. Those two were perfect for each other. And they stayed married right up to his normal death a year ago. See, is it odd or is it God? Sometimes God shows up in odd ways. I've had the privilege of working with every kind of alcoholic you can imagine, and they have saved my life. I don't tell them that till they're on the path, because then it might feed their ego and think they need to help me. I've had some sponsors try to help me. I hope you newcomers keep coming. I wish everybody in this room would stay sober forever. Wouldn't that be great? How many of you heard that there's like a less than 5% success rate now? I know you have. That's a lie. That's treatments. That's treatment numbers. They have no reason to have long-term success. They're not a long-term program. So their success rate is only 5%, because most people leaving treatment get drunk, primarily because they don't come into AA and give up to us and give in and do what we do, monkey see. I want you to know the truth about Alcoholics Anonymous. This isn't my opinion. 75% stay sober. 75%. It's hard to believe, isn't it? But there's a condition. It's in the forward to the second edition. It says, of those who came to AA and really tried, 50% stayed sober at once and remained that way. 25% got sober after some relapses. And then Bill was optimistic. He said, and those who remain with us, their life improves. The condition is of those who came to AA and really tried. See, really tried is subjective, isn't it? That's why I need a sponsor. Even today, I have a sponsor. He knows he's my sponsor. I sponsor several alcoholics. I have to sponsor. It keeps me in the middle of AA. They're like the block of sandpaper, and they spin around me so much they cut off my rough edges. Isn't that interesting? Just want to say one last thing. God's grace is available to anybody. It floats in the air. All I got to do is reach out and grab it. If you don't believe that, grab a newcomer with one day less than you. Get a big book. Sit down together. Read the book, and if it tells you to do something, do it. And you'll find yourself, you're part of that 75% to stay sober for life. 75% of us get to stay sober. That's outlandish when you talk about it out there. People don't believe that. But I need a sponsor whose objectivity can override my subjectivity about life. My sponsor has 62 years sober now. Not bragging, that's just what he is. My first sponsor was a guy by the name of Clarence Schneider. His story's in the big book, Home Brewmeister. He was my sponsor's sponsor. That doesn't mean anything special to me, but I've had influencers in my life, and I hope you do too. I have positive influence. Those first six members of AA became big, and Clancy became my sponsor at one point. Chuck C. became one of my mentors. I've had great influencers that caused me to want to do this when I'm asked, to give up and give in when it's inconvenient. And then the payoff, isn't what is not expected, is when you're in trouble and I need help, and they showed up. See? Now, I've gotten all kinds of help in the past 4 months while I've gone through this debacle with this broken hip thing and the blood clot in my leg. Mountain High is going on right now. It's a Pacific Group conference up in Mountain High. And I like going to that conference, but I can't go up into that high of an altitude with blood clots in my leg. But I'm taking the necessary medication, the blood thinners. I'm following the rules. There's rules everywhere. I'm following the rules, and I'm getting better. Newcomers, look around you. Monkey do, monkey see. Thank you.
Let's give Wayne another hand.